Well, tonight we are continuing in our series on wonderful words of life. These are great Bible verses that have meant a lot to me over the years. And so today we want to look at one from the 16th Psalm, which is a pretty extraordinary passage in Scripture. I remember when I was about still in high school, maybe about 17 or 18 years old, I ran into this. And I thought, that is the most beautiful, wonderful verse in the whole wide world. And it really is great. So read it with me from Psalm 16:11. Thou wilt show me the path of life. In thy presence is fullness of joy. At thy right hand there are pleasures forevermore. Well, okay, so that's the verse. You should know that on the day of Pentecost, when Peter was preaching, he mentioned this passage, this section of Scripture, and laid it out, explaining that it's actually about Messiah, because ultimately Messiah was not left in the grave so that his body would decay and corrupt, and he was brought back from death. You will not leave my soul in hell. You see verse 27, you won't suffer your Holy One to see corruption. And so he rose from death, his body never decayed. And then after that, verse 28, you have shown me the path of life. In Jesus' case, the path of life back from the dead. So you've shown me the path of life. In your presence is fullness of joy. So that's the day of Pentecost and Peter's sermon. Well, Paul in Acts 13, he also brought up this passage of Scripture. Technically, this is from chapter 16 of Psalms, verse 10, but it's right there in the same context. So Paul says, thou shalt not suffer thine Holy One to see corruption, same as what Peter said on the day of Pentecost. And then verse 36, Paul explained, David, after he had served his own generation by the will of God, fell asleep, was laid in unto his fathers and saw corruption, but not Christ. He whom God raised up, he saw no corruption. So when David said, you'll show me the path of life, he meant, you're going to show me how to avoid all my enemies who are trying to kill me. You know, what path should I take? But David did eventually die, and his body did decay, of course, but not so with Christ. So when it was said of Christ, then it was, you will show me the path of life back from death that I've experienced, back from the tomb. And so you have two great ideas, actually more than two. And so we're going to talk about one of these phrases is powerful. And then here comes another one. And they're stacked up to be, you know, so powerful together. So we want to look at this one, you'll show me the path of life. And that's the first powerful phrase. And then we'll look at some more. And there are several ideas even here. As I mentioned, when David said it, you'll show me the path of life. How do I avoid my enemies that are trying to kill me? And so show me how to avoid physical death and situations that cause physical harm. Show me the path of life. What's the way of wisdom? How do I survive this? And then the second bullet point, show me the path of life, has the idea of show me how to avoid lifeless life. You know, that is the grinding hardship that can take away my will to live. And we'll talk about that in just a moment, too. That's a great idea in the Old Testament culture, that life also is related to joy and happiness. The third bullet, show me how to avoid the second death. You know, show me the path of life. How do I avoid the second death, which is the lake of fire? Show me that. And, of course, the Lord does show us that. And then last of all, show me how to return from the grave. That's distinctively messianic so far, but it will be true of all of us very soon, right? Because we will die and we will have to come back from death. That's the rapture, the resurrection. And so we know about that. So let's unpack this a little bit. Show me the path of life. It is show me how to avoid physical death and situations that cause physical harm. That still is a legitimate expectation and prayer. Avoiding certain enemies and criminals, keeping us from being in the wrong place at the wrong time. How can we avoid physical catastrophe? Of course, you can't always. But how many times has the Lord probably helped us with this very thing? Teresa and I remember we were going to the circus when we were just college kids, downtown Chicago. We missed our bus stop for the circus. We're supposed to transfer and catch another bus. So we missed it, and then we realized, boy, this just isn't right, and we are in a Chicago ghetto. So we go to the bus driver and we say, what do you think we should do? And she said, I think you should get off at this stop and then catch a bus going the other direction, get your right transfer point and get where you're going. So upon her word, we jumped off and we looked around and thought, oh, no. And the off bus stop was a block or two away from the one that we needed to get on, the on bus stop. So we had to walk a little distance here in an area where we simply did not belong. You can't go there. We didn't realize where we were. So we were walking past this group of guys, again, worst case scenario, group of guys hanging out with nowhere special to go and nothing to do but display their royalty in that particular neighborhood and our unwelcomeness there. And so I have my pretty young girlfriend with me, and these guys are catcalling and trying to get her attention, both of ours. What are you doing here? You don't belong here. So we just keep walking. We get to our bus stop. The bus eventually comes, and nothing bad happened. But for those of you who know my high school background, I knew this was very, very bad. And so how is it that you can survive things like that? The Lord has to keep you safe when you're around a criminal element, when you're in danger from people who could hurt you. The Lord just has to keep you safe. And sometimes he chooses not to. But I'll bet a whole bunch of times he has kept you safe. The next part there about avoiding health problems, showing the path of life. That could be anything. When I married into Teresa's family, right away I noticed that something was a little strange because they had 5-gallon buckets of wheat in their laundry room. And this wheat was in need of grinding, and the boll weevils lived in it. And it doesn't matter. So it's like, why are you doing this? Oh, well, we grind our own grain and then we make fresh bread. What do you think Wonder Bread is? It's only 3 days old. You can't get fresher than that. And then there were these books like How to Eat Well to Live Long, things like that. And alternative medicines and things. So I don't know if any of that has helped me, but I've been eating a lot more healthy than I would have otherwise, I suppose, if I grew up with only my family. John McDowell says I look good for 90. So anyway, the Lord has to help us with things like that. The Lord has to help us with exercise, how to keep healthy, how to avoid injury. You're in a situation sometime and somebody says, no, you don't. You don't lift that barbell like that. That's going to hurt your knees. That's going to hurt your back. That's going to hurt your shoulders. Don't do it like that. Do it like this. And so you have this advice that comes to you along the way to keep you from harm. Because it's not like the worst thing in the world if I blow out my knees or I hurt my back. But you know, it's a little inconvenient when you're helping an older person change his toilet and you don't have the back health to pick up the old toilet and walk it outside. You have to have a certain amount of health to do certain ministries. And so how do you avoid injury? And of course, you don't always avoid, and that's fine. But how many times has the Lord probably helped us avoid injury so that we've been more effective in his service? How to find medical help. How many times does somebody say, you know what? I didn't even know that doctor existed. He was exactly the right one for me to go to. Sometimes it's all secret. We don't know what the Lord is doing. Secretly undermining some illness process that's cooking within our being at this moment. Some crazy cancer trying to take over or some kind of a virus. I think I had strep throat on Sunday. I hope I didn't make anybody sick. But I was on the internet. And it said strep throat goes away between 3 and 7 days, whether you get antibiotics or not. And if you don't get antibiotics, then the next time strep comes along, your body will probably know how to fight it better because it learned this time around. I thought, well, that sounds like it's for me then. But there's always something brewing, a little bacteria, something trying to knock you down. And the Lord, how many times has the Lord probably helped us with those kinds of things that we'll never know? So the Lord has to show us the path of life. I mean, how do you even physically survive in such a bad world? So what do you think? Does that raise any questions or observations? Kinsey, did you have your hand up once? It's amazing that any of us survive childhood, I think. Crazy. Show me the path of life, not only how to survive, but show me how to avoid a lifeless life. That is, again, the grinding hardship that can take away all my will to live. When you're talking about the biblical culture, particularly the Old Testament culture, there was a lot of talk about life, and you see that life has basically three ideas in a Jewish person's mind. The first one is a long life. He that will see good days, that has to do with this one. Good days, that's life, joyful life, happiness in life. And so, for example, watch how life and joy go back and forth in these texts. Deuteronomy 30:15, Moses on the plains of Moab. I have set before thee this day life and good, death and evil. So you see the parallelism here. I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life, that both thy and thy seed may live. Well, they're obviously already living. He's talking to living people, not deceased people. And so they're already living, but he means, do you want to have a long life? And do you want to have a full life? Jesus would say, abundant life. You want blessing? You want good? Do you want life? That's what he's saying. Choose life. And then in Psalm 30, verse 5, the same idea. His anger endures but a moment, in his favor is life. In his favor is life. Weeping may endure for a night, but joy comes in the morning. See how life and joy are set side by side over and over again. This happens constantly in the book of Proverbs. John 10:10, the thief comes not but for to steal and to kill and to destroy. I am come that they might have life and that they might have it more abundantly. So if you want to have long life and good days, good days, real life, abundant life, then the Lord has to show you how to do that. Show me the path of life. You have shown me the path of life. And so all of that is embedded in a Jewish person's mind when he says, show me how to live. We mean not just survive, running around with our ribs showing and everybody hating us and no clothes to wear, but a loincloth. That's living, but that's not to a Jewish person what is meant by life. Life is supposed to be abundant and joyful and, God willing, long. That's what a Jewish person would say. And so show me the path of life, how to have joy, how to avoid a bad life. Show me the path, Lord. The third idea, show me how to avoid the second death, eternity in the lake of fire. Obviously, that's the big one. That's the gospel calling. And it is interesting that even in the Old Testament, which is very earth-oriented, once again, I remember some conversation with a rabbi years ago, and he was telling the interviewer, for Jewish people, we don't get bogged down all the time in talking about heaven. We're talking about life here, how to make life better here. And that's true. I mean, that is a very Jewish way of thinking. You hear that a lot. And, of course, you see it a lot. Even in the Old Testament, there's not a lot of information in the Old Testament about people going to heaven, precisely. But you do have it. So Psalm 23:6, our favorite psalm, I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. So I'm going to go to where the Lord lives, and I'm going to be there forever. Well, that's obviously talking about a good eternity and avoiding the second death, eternity in the lake of fire. In the text we're looking at this very moment, Psalm 16:11, at thy right hand there are pleasures forevermore. I'm going to live this life and then I'm going to be at your right hand with pleasures forevermore. And then this is, you know, New Testament referring back to Old Testament. Maybe that's cheating a little. But Hebrews 11:5 is about Enoch. By faith, Enoch was translated that he should not see death and was not found because God had translated him. For before his translation, he had this testimony that he pleased God. So it's like death wasn't bad. what comes after death was not bad. So Enoch was translated so he didn't even have to die. He just was moved from one sphere to another, from earth to heaven. He didn't even have to die. And it says, and he got that privilege of moving from this world to the next one without dying. He got that privilege because he had this testimony that he pleased God. So God said, well, let's just take away death, which is always a little thorny. Let's just take that away, and then you can move right along without dying. What do you say? Now, of course, for all of us, that sounds pretty good. But you put those ideas together. I'm going to dwell in the Lord's house forever, where there are pleasures forevermore. And it's so wonderful that if somebody could just move into that other world, it would be great. That would be a sure sign that you are blessed indeed, because there you are moving to another realm without even having to die. Wouldn't that be great? And so you see how to avoid the second death, eternity in the lake of fire. Lord, show me the path of life. I want to end up in your house with pleasures forevermore in that blessed state, just like Enoch did. Does that raise any questions or observations? Desi, very right. The eternal perspective is everything. So this is now shifting gears a little bit, because it said, thou wilt show me the path of life. And then this, in thy presence is fullness of joy. So let's talk about that line for a couple of minutes. Full joys in God's presence. By the way, you see, I'm making it say full joys in that top line, plural, because in Hebrew, that's the way it is. It's plural. And what's really interesting is that's rare. Only two times in the entire Old Testament is the word joy, that particular word joy, plural. So to make it plural, we're talking about some degree, something special. In thy presence is fullness of joys. It's a big emphasis. It's very rare. So for a Jewish person to make that plural, he was trying to make a statement about how wonderful this is going to be. So in thy presence is fullness of joy. And then I'm marking here in the second bulleted note, the idea that full joy is possible only in the relational and spatial presence of God and nowhere else. I mean, you can have some joy as a lost person. We admit that Disneyland is fun for people all over the world, whether they're Christians or not. So, but what we're saying is full joy. In thy presence is fullness of joy. To have full joy where there's not also a sense of dread, because now this joy is going to end someday. I have to leave Disneyland when my park pass runs out at 11 o'clock tonight. So all the time there's this joy with a sense of dread. And only the people who have become relationally right with the Lord, and eventually spatially right with the Lord, that is, nearness to God in what we call heaven and what we call glory, that's where you have full joy. And that's the only place where you'll ever have full joy. No dread, no regret mixed into it. And the third bullet point is like that. But as the first one says, it's only possible in this circumstance. This one is not only possible in this circumstance. Fullness of joy is guaranteed for all who are in relational and spatial presence of God. And that's guaranteed for everyone, you know, no exception, and for no one else. So not only is it possible to have full joy in a right relationship with the Lord, and particularly in glory, where you have the right relationship with the Lord and you are in heaven itself, the residence of God, so to speak. Not only is it possible, it's guaranteed. If you have that relationship, it's guaranteed. And nobody else has such a guarantee. So it's a pretty big deal when David says, in your presence is fullness of joy. They'd be more perfect than any joy that you've ever had. So you go back to your very favorite time of life, probably a time when there was relief. You were afraid something wonderful wasn't going to happen, but then sure enough, it did happen. Relief. Yay, this is the best thing. This is the young lady who says, I think he likes me, but I'm not sure he likes me. I sure wish he would like me. And then one day she gets news on the phone or whatever Would you like to go out? Yes, yes, yes. Full joy as far as we can understand full joy. But even that has fear, regret, sense of dread. What if this doesn't work out too well? And so we go to heaven and there's none of that. It's just full joy, mixed with nothing else but full joy. Does that raise any questions or observations? Jerry. Good. Yeah. All right. So when you are in a very wonderful moment of relationship with the Lord, you're probably pretty close to full joy, but we are still fallen people. And, you know, we have things that we regret, that we're ashamed of, that we're afraid of. And so even at our very best moment of real communion with the Lord, there's still lurking disappointment. It comes in so many forms, doesn't it? Therese and I were talking at breakfast today about most Christians endure virtually all of their Christian lives with a low-grade sense of disappointment in how they've done. So, for example, we all know we could pray more, we could give more, we could witness more, we could do more for that neighbor. We said we're going to go over and help him, and we told our mothers that we would come over and fix the faucet on the sink. And so we're just not getting it done. And so I think most Christians live with a low-level feeling of disappointment, even bordering on guilt. So at our very best moments of worship and communion with the Lord, we still have things like that. But in those best moments, we're pretty close, as far as we can tell, we're pretty close to full joy. I mean, sometimes the fears, the sadnesses seem pretty remote. So the suffering is not central. And in this part of our lives, you know, suffering sure comes up a lot. But again, in light of eternity, the joy is featured. The suffering is even related to the joy. If we suffer with him, we shall also reign with him. So, but the joy is definitely the focus and is the premier motivation for Christian living. John. Yeah, joy and happiness is very hard to define. So if you have the peace of God that passes understanding, that's joy. But you can imagine in heaven we can do a little bit better than that. So, you know, I think that's pretty happy. So, good. Tom. Well, I think the best guess, if you want to guess, is that we're going to be very much in tune with the Lord's own emotions at that time. Because, you know, this is a long time after our judgment. We're 1,000 years into the reign of Christ and now the great white throne judgment. So we are very attuned to the emotions of God, and we probably would imitate those emotions, mirror them, whatever we should say there. So I think it is possible for God to have mixed emotions. We talk about that. I think there will be an aspect of this with God. You know, it repents me that we've come to this. It repents me that I made man and this has happened. I think there will be a sense of sadness. But by and large, someone has said that Spurgeon said, that even the groanings of the damned are the bass notes of God's orchestra. It's right. It was time. It is as it should be. And since God feels generally pleased with his grand plan for mankind, we'll be tracking with that. Josiah. Yeah. Yeah, I need to bring this to a close, and I want to show you a couple more things. In thy presence is fullness of joy, parallel thought, at thy right hand pleasures forevermore. Well, forevermore That's unending pleasure. Unending. So this is the anchor motivation for Christian living. That forever and ever, there's going to be pleasures. Fullness of joy, pleasures forevermore. Even in death, especially in death, these pleasures do not cease. And you'll see that's a very, very different sort of statement than Hebrews 11:25, where it talks about Moses and how he chose not to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. So you have pleasures of sin for a season held up against pleasures forevermore. I don't know how there could be a bigger contrast. Pleasures in sin just for a little while, or pleasures forevermore. And that's big. Okay, right in the middle of that slide, we're saying all of this is in your presence. You know, it has to be in the Lord's presence. In thy presence is fullness of joy, pleasures forevermore. And in the middle of that slide, joy experienced in his relational nearness now. Here's your therapy. This is so uncanny how this works. I was reading recently, I think Kent Hughes, who is president of Wheaton College, he was quoting a little testimony from an anonymous woman, and it goes something like this. She said, I was sitting with my work in the evening, looking outside at the starry night, and it occurred to me that I, living as I am in this beautiful evening, must be the happiest creature in God's universe. I don't know how many times I've been worried about something or maybe afraid, maybe somewhat saddened, disappointment. And I do what she did. I look around. I see all the great things the Lord has done for me. And I think, you know what? I believe I probably am the happiest creature in God's universe right now. It just changes. You know, the mindset, the perspective just melts away the fears and the sadnesses. Such a person as I am with these comforts around me and the beauty that I see around me, I suppose I must be one of the happiest persons in all of God's creation today. And just to say that, to teach your heart to say that when you're not feeling so privileged in some moment, that's the joy experienced in his relational presence now. And it truly is available to us now. Here's the conclusion then. This passage cannot be just a little bit important. The Lord is showing us how to maximize life here and now, both the length and quality of it. And in the very context of death, the Lord is still breathtakingly inviting, calling us to full joy and unending pleasure in eternity forever when we die. It's just when you put them together in the Lord's presence is full joy, pleasures forevermore. You'll show me the path of life. Every statement is hugely important. And if you get it, you know, if you let that sink deeply into your soul, that sounds just fine. If the Lord wants to, you know, give us an Enoch moment with the rapture, that sounds fine. If all I can do is sit tonight and look out my window at nature and the surroundings and say, I think I'm about the happiest creature in God's creation, the nearness of the Lord, the fullness of his joy, it's right there. And so when you think about, you know, how to live tomorrow, in thy presence is fullness of joy. Be in the Lord's presence. Draw near to God, and he'll draw near to you. So be near him in relational presence and know that someday, not so long from now, you're going to be near him spatially as well. And that's what we call glory.